Electric Moods, Indianapolis, 1972, and today. For all those hundreds of millions of years, electrically thinking life forms have wriggled, run, slept, procrastinated, or otherwise occupied themselves on our planet. Within each of these creatures, electric signals have been shooting along membraned nerve tunnels like the world's most intricate roller coaster, its cars all lit up and racing along at night. But in time, each signal reaches the end of its nerve fiber. This presents a problem, for nerves don't form a giant tube network, plugging continuously from one into the other. Instead, there's a gap between any two nerves. This gap, called a synapse, from the Greek word synaptein, meaning to fasten together, was clearly seen as early as 1897. It's not a very large separation, just a few thousandths of an inch, but on the microscopic level, it's a near-oceanic fissure. How can the signal cross it? The solution would be the next great step in understanding our nerves and mind. Electrons would be swallowed up in the gap between nerves, and even single ions would be as useless as great beach balls bobbing in a sea. Yet microscopists knew that something had to make it across. They even suspected it was electric. But if it wasn't a small electron, and it wasn't a large atom ion, what was it? The answer came from a 47-year-old man, a pharmacologist at the University of Graz. Late on Easter Eve, 1921, he woke up in the night, suddenly realizing exactly how those gaps are traversed. This was fabulous. Science's understanding of the nervous system would now be complete. He switched on the light, wrote down his great insight, then fell back asleep. In the morning, he woke up again. He'd always been a promising researcher. But what he dreamed of that night, well, it was an idea for the ages. He looked at the piece of paper where he'd written his great idea, and he couldn't read it. Penmanship had always been one of Otto Lowy's fortes, but not at 3 a.m. The next day was one of the worst of his life. However much Lowy stared, he couldn't make out his scrawled words on the slip of paper he'd used. Nor, however hard he tried, could he recall even a fragment of what he had dreamed. The following night, Sunday, he delicately let himself fall back asleep. If he was lucky, the answer would come back. Midnight came, he was still asleep, no dream. 1 a.m., no dream. 2 a.m., still no dream to wake him. But then, as Lowy lovingly remembered, at 3 o'clock, the idea returned. It was the design of an experiment. This time, he wasn't going to trust his idea to pen and paper. Lowy got dressed and hurried along to his laboratory. He had a way to identify the substance emerging from a nerve. What Lowy realized he had to do was to kill two frogs and cut out their hearts. He'd keep one heart attached to the nerves that poured their unknown chemicals down on the heart. He'd watch to see how the heart behaved, whether it slowed down or speeded up, as he made more of the chemical come out of the nerves. Then he'd siphon that unknown chemical so it poured over the other heart. If the second heart reacted in the same way, then he'd know that something in the liquid carried the answer. Lowy could do this, for like many anatomists of his time, he had a ready supply of unfortunate frogs at hand, and he knew that even a deceased frog's heart would continue beating for quite a while. He got to work with his scalpel, and soon had the two hearts in two separate buckets, where they throbbed away. He squeezed on the big vagus nerve leading to the first frog so that more of whatever liquid it had inside came out. The first heart slowed down. He then led some of that liquid into the second bucket, where the second heart was still pulsating away entirely on its own. A few moments after he poured in the liquid, the second heart also began to slow down. The liquid that came out of living nerves really was powerful enough to do that. What Lowy and his successors realized was that inside these liquids that squirt between our nerve cells, there are relatively ponderous floating molecules. They're often built of several hundred atoms stuck together, making them much bigger than the bobbing sodium ions, so they survive their journey unscathed. They act like miniature submarines. Whole navies of them are released from tiny bubbles in the tip of a firing nerve cell, and they float across the synapse toward their target. Similar molecules exist at nerve junctions throughout the body and are especially important in the brain's nerve connections. Since the brain cells we think with are called neurons. These molecules that transmit signals between them are called neurotransmitters. God stretches a forefinger to Adam on the Sistine ceiling, and his nerve endings dribble molecules across, which, through the ingenious expedient of opening Adam's sodium channels, make the first man's nerves start quivering with electric surges.